Hello, gadget lovers, and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. I'm Jason Bradbury.
And I'm Susie Perry. And before we dive in, a quick thank you to our sponsor, CEX.
Definitely. They are the legends giving old tech a second life. You can sell your gadgets for cash or pick up something brilliant for less, from iPhones to vintage consoles.
And everything, yes, everything, comes with a 5-year warranty. Even that slightly dusty ZX Spectrum that Jason insists is a collector's item.
It so is. So if you fancy a browse or a bargain, head to webuy.com or pop into one of nearly 400 CEX stores across the UK.
In this week's episode, new Amazon announcements, a new AI device from OpenAI, and our take on Xbox's Games Pass price hike.
But first, Susie, what have you been up to, tech-wise, this week?
Well, I've moved, obviously. I'm not in the same place as last time. So I'm now in Australia. I've been keeping my eye across what's been going on with tech headlines, and something kind of really made me stop in my tracks this week. Yeah. I'm sure, I know you'll have seen it. The AI actor called Tilly Norwood has been wreaking havoc in Hollywood. Have you heard about this story? So at first glance, you'd think that she was a real person, right? Because she, you know, is a young actress. She's sharing headshots and posting behind the scenes snaps. She's got what her creators call girl next door vibes. I've definitely heard that in the past as well. And her posts sound like something any kind of aspiring performer might write, except that she isn't real. Tilly was created by Dutch actor and comedian Eileen van der Velden, and she says that she wants her to become the next Scarlett Johansson, which I'm sure Scarlett Johansson is absolutely delighted about. As you can well imagine, this has not gone down very well in Hollywood, and their actors' union, SAG, have condemned it, saying that Tilly isn't an actor at all, but a computer program trained on the work of real performers. And they've warned agencies that signing her could breach new contracts designed to protect human talent after the AI strikes back in 2023. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, this is... I think we've talked about this happening, actually, when we started to talk about AI. So plenty of big names have had their say. Big famous actors like Emily Blunt, she watched a clip of Tilly and she said, "Good Lord, we're screwed." Van der Velden, the creator, insists that she's not trying to replace anybody. She calls Tilly a creative work, a piece of art, if you like, more like a character than hiring an actor. But she's also launched an AI talent agency, which she says some studios are already quietly working with. I think the key there is quietly. So what is going on in Hollywood? The reality is, I suppose, that AI is moving so fast that in 5 years' time, it could be completely normal to see this kind of thing, you know, in Hollywood films. I mean, it could be before then, whether you like it or not. It's fascinating stuff anyway, isn't it? It's part art project, part Pandora's box, if you like. And you could look at it and say, well, is it brilliant or is it a little bit chilling? Where do you stand on it? What do you think? Would you work with an AI host?
Well, I mean, I've just got to hold back because I have so much to say on this, but we've got so much to get on with. So I'll try and give you my kind of first shot on this. It's like Frankenstein, isn't it? They created it. Like, they created CGI. They created the acceptable notion of using a digitally created human instead of a real human, right? And you could say, well, they did it for good reasons, because you can't put a real actor in space and blow them up and all that sort of stuff, right? But Hollywood's doing it for money. You know, these are businesses. They put this sort of moral paradigm, you know, around this, and suddenly we're supposed to feel sorry for these multimillionaires. It's progress. They are the Luddites. They are going into the machines at night and breaking them because they fear their jobs being taken. And I have, on a human level, a lot of sympathy for that. But ultimately, it's sad as it might feel, and this is an awkward thing to say, but I think it's a truism. We're not owed a living. We, you know, we have to carve out our little niche in the world as best we can. All of us are threatened by AI. And yes, maybe the one good out of this is that if these SAG actors get out there and make a stink, which the world's press will notice because they're all, you know, Hollywood types, that's going to be good for maybe someone in a marketing agency whose job is threatened, or, you know, in some law firm where some young legal researcher now realizes that an AI can do their job far better than them. So, it's a mixed bag, but the kind of emotional tone of it, the kind of this is unfair, that doesn't chime with me whatsoever. I just think, you know, this is part and parcel of progress.
If I just play devil's advocate for a minute, if you're basing an AI character on a real actor who's spent their life honing their craft, if you like, and then suddenly they're not going to get any more work because the AI actor, I'm just going to go in black and white here, is going to get all their work. You can see there that...
Oh, of course, if they're doing that.
But that's pissed off, wouldn't you? Like you could be replaced, I could be replaced.
Yeah, we were.
We can already do it now on this podcast. We could do it.
We were replaced for real. We did that experiment. Wouldn't it be interesting if we were to do the Gadget Show item, which I'm referring to? I'm sure most of our regular listeners and viewers will remember. You were replaced by an actual AI, an avatar, weren't you? And I was replaced by a robot. And at that point, it was just funny because the two solutions were a bit naff in a really good
sense. A bit clunky,
anyway.
Weren't they, back in those days? But
now
obviously,
you
they're
could do
honed.
It. But yeah. But I'm not talking about that, Suze. I think you're making a really good point. That's atrocious. If you're suddenly able to copy an actor's face and voice, of course not, without their permission, without remuneration. But we both know, in reality, that's not what they're doing. These are very protected individuals. They have agents and contracts and lawyers. And an industry, that is very sophisticated and very litigious. I think it's just an adjustment. They're just manoeuvring for position. The agencies and the studios are just manoeuvring so that they can all make as much money as possible.
No, I just wonder if it's a slippery slope, and it depends very much now. This is a pivotal time on how this is handled, you know, in this situation, and they do need to make sure that all the laws and everything are in place. Otherwise, they are going to be just completely taken
over. I guess,
over.
No, you make a good point. I just feel it's inevitable. Right, I tell you what, there's something that's been all over the news that I know you'll be following, and as you might imagine, I'm a big fan of, and that's the actual physical launch of Meta's Ray-Ban display glasses. They've now officially landed in America, and I'm dead jealous. But if you're thinking, Suze, I might just swing by on one of my jet journeys across the planet and order a pair, get them shipped over to the UK, think again. They're completely sold out. Every store that's had them has been cleaned out. Now, obviously...
Wow, really?
Yeah, look, think about it. How long have I been hammering on about this? I mean, both of us, you know. And my point is always that, and I've just held up my Meta Quest 3, by the way, if you're listening to this podcast rather than watching. I'm now holding up my white glasses, which I often... display as the future of the mobile phone, because why would I want to crane my neck on a little kind of Egyptian, looking at a little Egyptian tablet in my hand, aka a smartphone, when I can have my data, my TikTok, my podcasts, my news.
You're so anti-phone.
My sat nav. Yeah, I am on my glasses, I'm really happy that there seems to be a lot of people that feel similarly enthusiastic about a pair of bins that you wear on your head that display data. And trust
me. So that's so interesting that they're sold out, isn't it? That, I mean, can you not get a pair on eBay or anything?
$4,000. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Yeah, if you go to eBay, last time I looked, I'm not going to pretend that they're all that price, but I saw a pair on eBay for 4,000 quid. So Meta, to be clear, haven't released any official sales figures yet, right? But given the demand, I think it's safe to say they've probably shifted hundreds of thousands in what is a matter of days. So, okay, just to give a little bit of meat on the bone, because we have discussed this, but just in case you're behind the curve, they've basically taken the original Ray-Ban Metas, right? The ones that could live stream and play music, and added a proper head-up display, right, in the lens, which I've not seen, by the way. I've not tested. But from what I've seen of other people testing it, you can see messages, directions, and you can get prompts from Meta's own AI. And this information floats right in front of your field of vision. So it's pretty mad. We've gone from, sunglasses with Bluetooth to a full-on sci-fi, mixed reality glasses. I think it's absolutely superb. And I would be literally sleeping in a sleeping bag like that we used to with the iPhone launches. Outside, wherever, in Regent Street. Were they only to launch them in the blooming UK, which they haven't done yet.
Do you know what I would really like to know? How many they put into the shops? Or are they doing this thing where they put a small amount to create, you know, some drama, some PR, to create a demand? I would love to know where this is going, or whether it is just a massive, like you feel, a lot of people wanting to buy it. I'd love to know if it's a marketing ploy or not.
Is it all hype? Yeah, no, I must admit, as I was saying this, that thought did occur to me. I mean, what would you have to lose from that endeavour?
Well,
so you hide your sales figures. So it'll be interesting, because they can't hide their sales figures for too long. So we will know whether it's in the hundreds. And if it's hundreds of thousands that have been sold, I think that's pretty significant, you know.
I think they divide people. I think people are either really excited, or people are like, no, I don't want that in my face. I don't want it. I get a lot of negative comments when I post anything about it. I don't know if it's just the kind of people that follow me.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to know, really, isn't it? Anyway, what else do you know?
Okay, so if that wasn't enough to get me excited, we've just had our first proper hint. Are you ready for this? About the PlayStation 6.
Okay.
Which is nuts. It's only a year ago that you and I were talking about the PlayStation 5 Pro. And I remember that because I went and bought one. So it's straight from Mark Cerny. He's the guy who actually designed the PS5. He appeared in a video with AMD, the chip manufacturer, and basically confirmed, yes, Sony's next console is coming in a few years. All right.
Okay.
And it's going to be a serious leap forward. So they're working on a new graphics hardware, something called Radiance Cores. C-O-R-E-S, so it means the cores of the processor. Custom tech that's going to be built purely for ray tracing and path tracing. Okay, so we're adding path tracing, I can almost say it, to the ray tracing array, which means lighting and reflections in games are about to get so realistic your eyeballs will struggle to know what's real or what is game. It's important that what the news is, because it was the AMD conference, that Sony and AMD are building something totally new to push this agenda, right?
And but it's still all coming in the next few years.
Yeah, it's early days, but I'm hyped already. If you can't get enough of us chatting gadgets, there's loads more waiting for you over on Patreon. That's right, extra episodes, bonus clips, behind the scenes bits, and all the stuff we couldn't quite squeeze into the main show. And yes, it's the only place you can watch and listen completely ad-free.
So if you fancy supporting what we do, just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and join the gang. We'd love to have you along. All right, quick break to thank our sponsor, CEX.
Yeah, so if you love gadgets, and let's face it, you do, their stores are heaven. Consoles, laptops, tablets, VR gear, cameras, games, even movies on Blu-ray.
And everything's covered by a 5-year warranty. So you can buy pre-loved tech with total peace of mind. And don't forget, you can trade in your old kit for cash or for credit. So that forgotten console might just pay for your next upgrade. Just like that classic Sega Game Gear that Jace is holding
up. I was wondering if you'd noticed that. Did you know that if you got one of these boxes, you could trade it in for 134 quid of in-store credit, or 110 quid cash, or this classic Game Boy, I've got my notes here, box, it's got to be boxed, that's 113 quid trade-in, it's not bad, is it? Or 94 quid cash. And even better, if you're lucky enough to have, say, a boxed copy of the original Pokemon, that could get you up to 134 quid. It's absolutely extraordinary. Classics like these, as you might suspect, hold their value and are a great way to upgrade to the latest kit like this one. The MetaQuest 3, which you can get for as little as 245 quid at CEX.
So head to webuy.com or pop into one of nearly 400 CEX stores that are across the UK and see what you can find. Right, okay. Amazon has just had a major hardware refresh and launched upgrades across its Echo, Fire TV, Kindle, Ring and Blink lines. So, okay, let's just go through the Echoes then. The Dot Max, the Studio and the Echo Show 8 and 11. So the Dot Max, first of all, basically, you're going to get three times the bass. So you're going to get much more of a filled of room of sound.
Give me the bass.
It's all about the bass. The studio, there's been a complete redesign. That's a lot smaller, so 40% smaller than the previous studio.
Wow.
And the Echo Show 8 and 11, they've got improved screen quality. They're 8 or 11 inches, obviously. Stereo speakers, smart camera features, deeper integration with Alexa and that kind of thing. So those have all changed. And like I said, you know, they're all just becoming a lot smarter, really. They also announced a new Fire TV Stick 4K Select. That's more affordable, 4K streaming stick. It's under £50. And there are also several new full-size Fire TV models in the UK. The 2 Series, the 4 Series, and the flagship Omni QLED line. So the Fire TV 2 Series, that's basically your entry level.
Yeah.
And these are Amazon's lower-cost smart TVs for more casual viewing, if you like. 32-inch display models are 720p. The 40-inch models are full HD, 1080. HDR support is limited. I'm not going to go through all the blah,
now, give us the Fire TV 4 Series, the mid-tier.
Yeah,
series.
So these are your 4K resolution, HDR-supported models, really. Better panel and processing than the 2 Series that I was just talking about. More capable for regular viewing, streaming, smart home features, you know, without breaking the bank, really. So they're from just under £430. And then you've got your flagship models, so your Omni QLED models. The new one is reported to be about 60% brighter than Amazon's previous models. It also has nearly double the local dimming zones compared to its predecessor. So that helps with the contrast and reducing halo or blooming. And Amazon claims that the new chip is about 40% faster. I mean, that's unbelievable, isn't it, really?
It's the, you know what's funny is it's all I want, right, is a Fire Stick that doesn't lag.
I know, well, that's buffer. That's it. That's it. So 40% faster.
Talk about the telly, yep. I know that, but yeah.
It's improving, you know, responsiveness, menu speed, all the things that you want to just be immediate and general performance. And that starts from just under £650. So yeah, that sounds a lot better.
Yeah, you know, let's hope that it lives up to the hype.
Right, so just before I finish, I've got one more thing to tell you about. It's the Kindle Scribe is the biggest shake-up in the Kindle line. You know me and a Kindle. This one is... I love a Kindle. It's thinner, faster, and Amazon are introducing a color display version, ColorSoft, with AI-enhanced notebook search features. So it's different to the ColorSoft that I fell in love with a couple of years ago.
Yeah, which we got you for Christmas. This one you can actually write. You can scribe on, which is so cool. I love it. Well, but you know what? The old Amazon announcements are still coming thick and fast. They're also pushing hard on the smart home front. They're announcing upgrades to Ring and Blink security products. And obviously, as you would know, tied tightly to AI. Yes, giving AI access to your home CCTV. Any problems there? Any potential science fiction movie narratives? Anyway, that aside, Ring, we're seeing Amazon's first 4K video doorbell based on the fact that so many epic fails and sort of criminals running into blooming lampposts and stuff has come onto my YouTube feed courtesy of someone's Ring doorbell. I'm all in favour of 4K under a new imaging promise that they're calling retinal vision. Retinal vision. You're going to get on both your doorbell, on your doorbell cameras, enhanced zoom, so up to 10 times. Better low light performance, which is really good if you want to watch your crim running away with a package they just nicked from your house, only to step on a skateboard and go flying. And AI features that can identify suspicious activity. Oh, yeah. Define suspicious, please, officer. A new search party feature for pets. So that can report a lost dog in the Ring app. And nearby Ring cameras are going to use AI to look for matches and notify you. Oh, my God, that's cool. Forget the loss of privacy, all right? Oh, my God. Oh, my God, forget that. But I'm genuine. I love the idea that we can aggregate everyone's Ring doorbell and as a community look for a lost dog. That's cool. And also... it's also really scary.
I made it sound really nice by...
Listen.
That's just to detract you.
Okay, so imagine that you're Amazon and you've got to announce that your mass surveillance capability is coming out. What do you call it? How about this? Familiar faces. All right, no, in all seriousness, I'll stop my kind of Orwellian vision for the future. Familiar faces is a new part of the sort of facial recognition tech, which they are saying is going to reduce false alerts. So you get less alerts based on the fact that your kids come home from school and you're like, it's my kid, don't tell me, I know he comes home the same day time every day. And Alexa Plus is now got something called Greetings, which are best described as a kind of virtual receptionist interaction, right? This is all going to be part of the package. So this is the biggest news, though, because you know, Suze, I'm actually quite a fan of this platform, and various members of our family have got different types of Alexas. In fact, one member of the family, I won't name this person, but they are partially sighted, and the Alexa is really important to him because it enables him to interact with all of his stuff and listen to the football and all that sort of stuff, right? And I know that these devices are really, really important to the lives of many, many people. But it's always been clear to me that some of the advantages of AI don't exist in this so-called kind of, you know, assistant technology until now.
No. They're a bit dumb, really, weren't they?
Really dumb, really dumb. Alexa Plus is being built into many of the new Echo and display devices. And it's meant to be more contextual, more proactive, smarter, basically, less dumb when it comes to conversation. Some of the new hardware, so Echo and Fire TVs, are going to be optimized to run and support this new suite of Alexa Plus features. For now, Alexa Plus is still rolling out, mostly in the US, but it's gradually going to be expanded to other territories. Here's the thing, though. And this is
so can you use it on your Echo if you've got one now?
No.
Oh, said, no, really?
I know. Alexa Plus needs the newer AZ3 or AZ3 Pro chips, which, wouldn't you know, are in their swanky new devices in order to handle its upgraded voice and generative AI features. So, you know, there you go. Should you upgrade, Suze? Is it worth the upgrade?
I don't know. I mean... They've gone, well, do you tell me? They seem to have gone big with the latest lineup, but
yeah.
What do you think about it?
I think these companies, they've got to make a profit. And if it's, you know, genuinely the case that you need a particular chip hardware, which it seems like you do, to be fair, to have a much more intelligent, interactive kind of virtual home assistant, fair enough. Like I said, particularly for one member of our family, that technology so far is a lifeline. So I think maybe that's going to be on the Christmas list for him.
Well, I think if you're kind of starting out, we've just listed a whole load of shiny stuff, which sounds fantastic. If you're out to buy some new tech, then probably go for it. But I think if you've still got your old stuff and it does the job, then maybe you don't need to replace it all.
Yeah.
Now, here's an interesting one. Apparently, OpenAI and designer Jony Ive, yes, Jony Ive of Apple fame, are hard at work on a mysterious new AI gadget. According to a report in the Financial Times, they're still trying to crack a few big challenges, including what this little palm-sized device personality should be and how often it should actually talk to you. So one source described the idea as having a friend who's a computer, but not your weird AI girlfriend. The device apparently doesn't have a screen, but it's said to be roughly about the size of a smartphone. You'll be able to carry it around or pop it down on a table, and it will communicate through a microphone, speaker and camera, maybe even more than one camera. I mean, it sounds a bit familiar so far. It's the first of a whole family of devices that are being developed by Ive and OpenAI's Sam Altman, with the first one expected sometime around late 26 or early 27. And the big aim, really, is to make something that feels accessible but not intrusive. So think Siri, but better. The team is still figuring out how it should sound, act, and know when to stop talking, which, you know, I think we're all trying to figure that out. Apparently, they're exploring an always-on approach that listens and learns throughout the day rather than waiting for you to say, hey, OpenAI. Of course, that raises some pretty major privacy questions. And according, I know, and according to the report, there's also a massive challenge there around computing power. I mean, that brings up so many questions. We'll come to that in a minute. So that basically, there's still a really long road ahead. But if anyone can make an AI gadget that actually feels human, it's probably Jonny Ive and Sam Altman. I mean, do you think? Do you think or?
I was until you told me that. Because what? I'm like, the main thing that I'm amazed by is that there's nothing in that statement or report, whatever, however you want to classify it, that tells me any. I mean, why would that be an alternative to a smartphone, which if we take Apple at their word, is going to be a really good AI device, but it's also got an incredible screen and incredible cameras, and it's really easy to hold in your hand and all that stuff. Or the already incredibly intelligent and interactive AI feature-rich offerings from Android, right? From the Android platform. What possible argument can you make? Unless it's like, I don't know, like 50 quid, maybe. You could say it's really inexpensive.
Yeah,
so it's a pebble. It's a pebble that talks. That's what you just described, isn't it?
I think it's interesting to see how it may affect Apple.
And Susie, as you know, if that wasn't the only AI news, I mean, anyone would think we're on an exponential explosive curve of insane change on an almost daily basis. Big AI news this week. OpenAI's new text-to-video tool, Sora, has officially launched. The app has been downloaded over 1 million times, certainly when I last checked, in less than 5 days, which is actually faster than GPT managed to do at launch. So ChatGPT. So I know that our listeners and viewers will be familiar with this, but just in case, Sora generates 10-second realistic videos from a simple text prompt. So you could type in penguin DJ at a Berlin nightclub and boom, you got an instant video. It's currently invite only in North America, but that hasn't stopped it topping the Apple App Store and flooding social media channels with AI clips, which I have to say, for the record, I absolutely love. But they call it brain rot. It's so aimed at me. But because this is AI and it's 2025, it's not without controversy. So Sora has sparked a wave of very, very convincing deep fakes of dearly departed celebrities, let me say, including especially Michael Jackson, Tupac, and Robin Williams. Sometimes all three of them in the same video. And with regard to Robin Williams, there's been a bit of an outcry, actually, because he's so beloved by people. His daughter, Zelda Williams, has actually pleaded with people to stop sharing AI videos that use her dead dad's likeness. And absolutely my heart goes out to her. I totally get that. So no glib responses from me. What I will say is that you know, the Michael Jackson videos, for example, are absolutely hilarious. It's got Michael Jackson going to McDonald's and sort of singing an order or just doing everyday stuff. And it's so him. I think, actually, in the time it's taken us at the Gadget Show team, the Gadget Show podcast HQ, to compile this report, I'm pretty sure that they have clamped down on this now and that celebrity likenesses are now something that you can't do on Sora. You'll have to.
Well, I hope so, really, because I mean they're so good that you only know that they're not real because of the stupid things that they're doing.
Yeah.
But if it is somebody that you're related to or friends with or whatever, then
yes,
it's shit.
You see, you're much more grown up than me. I'm just like put Michael Jackson on a skateboard. But yeah. You're right. There are massive.
Well, imagine if they did it about your nan. Imagine if they did that to your nan.
What am I supposed to think? That's not a good idea. Am I supposed to go, oh, yeah, that wouldn't be funny? Brilliant idea. When we finished, that's what I'm going to do. But
no.
I'm being playful. I get it. There are massive ethical issues with this. So you get a particular politician and you get them saying some stuff and you place it strategically, they can get into a lot of trouble for something that never even happened. I get it. And it's unfair. And yes, my heart did go out to Zelda, and it was a kind of, you know, it made me realise there is a dimension to this that's not altogether very positive for humanity. But some of them are just so funny, you know, they're just really funny. anyway, there we go. AI, it's happening so quickly, it's knocking your head off. So you may have seen this one ripple through the gaming world in the last couple of weeks. Xbox have just slapped a 50% price hike on its top tier Game Pass, the Ultimate Plan, which is now going to be... I'm upset about this. It's now going to be $22.99 a month, up from $14.99 a month. I'm really annoyed about that. Oh, man. Maybe it's Trump and his tariffs. I've no idea. Let's find out. Naturally, the internet... like me, just then, has lost its mind, and the backlash has been so intense that Xbox's own website actually crashed for several hours.
Good, it serves them right.
It does, especially the timing is ridiculous. That literally, we are probably, most people listening to this, we'll be at the point where they're releasing the, you know, the Asus Rogue ROG Xbox Ally and Ally X, which are two, you know, handhelds, a bit like that. That are, you know, kind of in a loose sense, official Xbox portable gaming consoles. What a time to do this. Gamers are calling it a betrayal, a greed move. Yeah. And plenty are saying they'll cancel their subs. How insane. Even a Microsoft exec admitted price increases are never fun for anybody. He'll be out.
Yeah, but look at the price hike. It's not just a pound or two, is it? It's massive.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely insane. It's insane. Game Pass has been reshuffled into three tiers now. So Essential, Premium and Ultimate. Ultimate gets the full package, which is day one releases, cloud gaming at 1440p and a beefed up rewards system. Right. The lower tiers are also being upgraded. More games, more features to soften the blow. They're under pressure. Infrastructure costs apparently are going up. First day big AAA games being added. Yeah, well, we could blame the studios for spending $300 million making the game, but there you go. And subsidies on titles like Call of Duty. There's money bleeding somewhere, and they've got to stop the bleeding. So, What do you think? What's your take, Suze?
Well, I just think that there are so many subscriptions now, you know, and people are strapped for cash, that if you are... hardcore gamer, nothing will stop you. But if you're kind of mid-tier and below, I think this could be a bit tricky, you know.
Well, that's like
people haven't got any spare cash.
That they've gone up about as much or more than what I currently pay for Disney Plus. So I would have to say, right, I'm going to have to stop Disney Plus, and I won't be able to watch Alien Earth, which, by the way, is... I can't say it without a swear.
Quite
it's that good.
Quite good.
Something brilliant, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how I'll justify this. Because times are hard. And Microsoft, times are going to get harder, I think. I don't think the prognosis for the global economy in the next year or two is particularly positive. Unless you know something I don't know. I mean... The timing's weird. Sorry, Susie.
Yeah, no, I just am agreeing with you, really. I think it's always better to see how a community reacts. I think it's important, and I think it's pivotal, because not just for Xbox, but for all subscription platforms and models in gaming and beyond.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, there is a traditional Silicon Valley startup method, isn't there? Which is you start off being effectively free or free sometimes or incredibly good value. And then when you've introduced yourself into the life and culture of your marketplace, you start to ramp up the cost. And were it not the case that that's happening with almost everything, I mean, all the streaming services are putting their costs up. It feels to me anyway, I'd have to look at the actual numbers, but that's what it feels like. It feels like more and more of my money now is going out of the door, and I'm having to look at whether I can justify, you know, a particular streaming service, because it's just becoming insane. Let us know. Don't you think, Susie, this is one for our community?
Yeah.
Especially those like me who've been long-term Game Pass Ultimate customers. I mean, years, I've just not even looked at it. I'm going to give it a look now and make a few decisions.
At absolutely. Tell us what you think about this. We would love to hear your thoughts.
That is a wrap for this episode. All right. Stop the applause. All right. I enjoyed it too. And as ever, a huge thanks to CX for backing the pod.
Yep, whether you're after the latest bit of kit or fancy diving back into some retro favourites, CEX has you covered. And before we vanish, a massive shout out to our amazing Patreon crew.
Yeah, big gadgety salutations to Dave Green, Ren Mandagorn, Dave McHugh, Matthew Riley, Dean Day, Chris Cool, Stephen Green, Tall Man with Glasses, Andrew Bamford and Duncan Bell. We love you.
We do. And also to Colin Jones, Gordon Packer, Richard Martin, Simon Ryland, Philip Edgerton, Richard Wykes and Danny Rushton. You absolute legends, all of you.
Yep. So do you want to hear your name in that list? Well, it's easy. Join us on Patreon. You'll get bonus bits, behind the scenes extras and, of course, the ad-free version of this here podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and you might get a shout out next week.
So join the Gadget Gang. You know it makes sense.
And don't forget our Q&A special, the Inbox Edition, lands later this week. See you then.
See you later.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.